This episode is part of the 2017 Ann Arbor District Library Summer Game and has clues embedded in it that can be used to win points and glory in the summer game itself. Just listen for the special sound effect at certain points in this episode and go to play.aadl.org and follow the instructions on how to use this knowledge for personal gain. You certainly don't have to play the game in order to enjoy this episode. This is Ann Arbor Stories. I'm Rich Betty. A few things to know before we start the countdown. Number one, an astronaut is a person trained to travel in a spacecraft. Number two, the reason we have enough Ann Arbor astronauts for an actual countdown is the University of Michigan Aeronautics Program, the first of its kind in the United States. It started way back in 1914, that's 11 years after Kitty Hawk, and to date has graduated more than 6,000 aeronautical and aerospace engineers. This program has made Ann Arbor a premier destination for Navy and Air Force pilots interested in how these things fly, not just that they do, as well as space, Earth, and flight nerds, some of the best nerds there are. Number three, until 2004, astronauts were sponsored and trained exclusively by governments, either military or civilian space agencies. They were recruited in classes every few years. NASA Group 1 was recruited in 1959 and dubbed Mercury 7, while NASA Group 4, brought on board in 1965, were dubbed the Scientists. Many of our Ann Arbor astronauts came up together in these classes. Astronaut isn't a job posting you find tacked to a coffee shop corkboard. Number 4, a countdown is a silly but hopefully entertaining way to honor these amazing astronauts and the feats they accomplished during their time on and above Earth. But astronaut isn't the safest occupation, and a few of the men on our list don't die happy old men. 24 U.S. astronauts have died in spaceflight or during test flights and training, not to mention a lot more close calls than you want to think about. This list means no disrespect to these men who did more in their lives then put out a moderately successful local history podcast and apologize to Brian constantly for failing to enunciate effectively. Number five, this list is accurate to the summer of 2017. There's still time for Ann Arborites to get their butts in space and crack the top 10 when we reevaluate in 2018. To the countdown. Number 10. Theodore Cordy Freeman, born February 18th, 1930 in Haverford, Pennsylvania. Some kids cleaned stalls for free horseback riding lessons. Teddy did grunt work at a local airfield in exchange for free flying lessons, earning his pilot's license at 16. Teddy had big plans to join the Navy and fly jets, but a freak blow to the jaw in a high school football game knocked his teeth out of alignment, causing him to fail the Naval Academy physical when he tried to apply. Teddy underwent painful surgery to correct the problem, which involved grinding down his teeth and anchoring them with heavy braces. His teeth slowly straightened to Navy standards, and in 1953, he was accepted to the Academy. Teddy earned a bachelor's in science, then graduated with his master's in aeronautical engineering from the University of Michigan in 1960, all while flying as a test pilot and rising in the military ranks. Freeman was part of NASA Group 3 in 1963. He finally made it. 1 year into training, he was returning to base after a practice flight when his jet hit a goose midair. The jet crashed, killing Freeman before he could eject. He was buried with full honors at Arlington National Cemetery. The first two NASA men at the scene of the crash were fellow astronauts Jim Lovell and Pete Conrad. They'd been going out goose hunting near the airbase when they saw a crowd gathered around a smoking crash site. They recovered some of the surviving instruments and estimated the location of the mid-air collision. When they arrived at the site, they found two things: the smashed plexiglass windshield of the jet and a very dead Canada goose.
Number 9.
Carl Hennies. Carl Gordon Hennies, born October 17, 1926 in Cincinnati. He served as the observer for the University of Michigan Observatory from 1948 to 1951 and earned a Doctor of Philosophy degree in astronomy from the University of Michigan in 1954. NASA selected him as a scientist astronaut in 1967, and for nearly 20 years, he served on support crews and in simulations until he got his first shot at space travel in 1985, right before his 50th birthday. Hennies blasted off aboard the Shuttle Challenger as part of the Space Lab 2 mission, conducting experiments and making sure everything ran smoothly on the science end. After 126 orbits of the Earth, he returned with 188 space hours under his belt. Hennes accepted a position as senior scientist in the NASA Space Sciences branch, where he continued learning about humans and space travel. In 1993, at the age of 66, he climbed Mount Everest to test a NASA device measuring how the body reacts to radiation at extreme elevations. By the time he reached advanced base camp, about 21,000 feet up the mountain, he was struggling to breathe. His lungs filled with fluid due to high-altitude pulmonary edema, and help arrived too late. He died on the side of the mountain.
Number eight.
Anthony England. Anthony Wayne England, born May 15, 1942, in Indianapolis, but grew up in Fargo, North Dakota. He earned 3 degrees from MIT in Earth and Planetary Sciences and was made a scientist astronaut in 1967 at just 25 years old, the youngest recruit at the time. England was on support crews for Apollo 13 and 16, but got tired of sitting on the bench and left for the U.S. Geological Survey in 1972. NASA lured him back to Johnson Space Center in 1979 and finally sent him into space with fellow astronaut Carl Hennes on the Skylab 2 mission. His Ann Arbor connection? England served as Associate Dean for Academic Affairs in the College of Engineering at the University of Michigan, and he's currently, as of 2011, the Dean of the College of Engineering and Computer Science at the University of Michigan, Dearborn.
Number seven.
Ed White's picture. The story of the Voyager Golden Records is amazing. NASA contracted with astronomer Carl Sagan in the 1970s to create golden records, which would be affixed to the Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 space probes. Both probes were shot into space on predetermined paths to planets and their moons, but should alien life forms encounter or recover the probes at some time, it was thought that including a message from humanity would be a good idea. Sagan and his committee created a golden record containing various sounds from nature, musical selections from different eras and cultures, spoken greetings in 59 languages, and 115 images. Some of the images were scientific in nature, mathematical definitions and diagrams of human anatomy, but a good portion were pictures of humans doing human things, like eating, looking through microscopes, breastfeeding, and walking in space. That was Ed White, 1959 UM graduate and the first man to walk in space. He's the only truly identifiable person included on the Golden Records, his image currently hurtling through space well beyond Pluto. This image of this amazing man has been traveling farther and farther away from Earth for the last 40 years, waiting to be seen by aliens unknown. They say the two Voyager spacecraft have enough power to operate their scientific instruments through 2020, and by 2025, we'll likely lose communication with them as they drift through interstellar space. Protected by that handsome picture of Ed White. And a recording of Johnny B. Goode.
Number six.
James A. McDivitt. James Alton McDivitt, born June 10, 1929 in Chicago, but attended high school in Kalamazoo and went to college at Jackson Junior College. He joined the Air Force, flying 145 combat missions in the Korean War, then returned to school in 1957 and finished first in his aeronautical engineering class at the University of Michigan in 1959. McDivitt became a test pilot, and in 1962, NASA made him an astronaut, putting him in command of his very first flight, Gemini 4. Along with co-pilot Edward White, whose picture you're well acquainted with, the men spent 4 days in space in 1965. While White made man's first spacewalk, McDivitt took the first picture etched into the Golden Records. McDivitt blasted back into space on Apollo 9 in 1969, commanding a 10-day mission that was the first to use the lunar module. He rose in the ranks at NASA, eventually being offered the position of shuttle director, which he turned down to go into the private sector. He's in the U.S. Astronaut Hall of Fame, the National Aviation Hall of Fame, and appeared as himself on the frickin' Brady Bunch. He also picked up an honorary doctorate in aeronautical science from the University of Michigan in 1965. Not enough? How about named places? At the intersection of South and East University, on the campus of the University of Michigan, there's a space called McDivitt White Plaza, right near the engineering arch. guess who that's codenamed for? Not enough? McDivitt also has a conference room named after him at the University of Michigan Aerospace Building. For the record, it seats 40, has a 65-inch TV with HDMI hookups.
Number 5.
Jack Luzma. Jack Robert Luzma, born February 29, 1936 in Grand Rapids, but grew up right here in Ann Arbor. He attended Angel Elementary, Tappan Middle School, and graduated from Ann Arbor High in 1954. Like a good Ann Arbor kid, he went to U of M and received a BS in Aeronautical Engineering in 1959, then joined the Marine Corps. Luzma became a NASA astronaut in 1966, supporting three Apollo missions, including the famous Apollo 13 flight. He's the guy in NASA Mission Control who received the famous "Houston, we have a problem" message. His first trip to space was a doozy, a 59.5-day mission on Skylab 3, where he served as pilot on the three-man crew. They did 858 revolutions around the Earth before splashing down in the Pacific. Luzma returned to space a second time in 1982 as commander of STS-3, the third orbital test flight of the Space Shuttle Columbia. He spent another 8 days in space before returning home safely. So what do you do with the rest of your life after spending more than 2 months in space? Well, first they give you an honorary doctorate at U of M in 1973, and then you run for office. Mayor? Heck no. Congressman? As if. Luzma ran for Senate in 1984 against Democratic incumbent Carl Levin, losing, but receiving a respectable 47% of the vote. He blamed the defeat on a video that surfaced right before the election, in which he was filmed telling Japanese auto workers that his family owned a Toyota. The tape did not play well in Detroit. Luzma entered the private sector and, after 52 winters in Michigan, moved his family to sunny Texas. He too is in the U.S. Astronaut Hall of Fame.
Three-way tie for number 2.
The Apollo 15 crew. James Benson Irwin, born March 17, 1930 in Pittsburgh. David Randolph Scott, born June 6, 1932 in San Antonio. And Alfred Merrill Worden, born February 7, 1932 in Jackson, Michigan. This is the famous All-University of Michigan Apollo flight you may have heard about. But let's get the Ann Arbor bona fides out of the way first. Irwin and Worden earned their master's degrees from Michigan in 1957 and 1963 respectively, while adding honorary doctorates in 1971 after they, spoiler alert, went into space and, for the first time ever, drove the freaking lunar rover on the surface of the moon. Scott attended U of M for 1 year, studying engineering and joining the swim team, but left for West Point and didn't earn his U of M degree until that sweet honorary doctorate in 1971. Scott was called up to NASA as part of Group 3 in 1963, while Irwin and Worden joined with NASA Group 5 in 1966. The old dog of the group, Scott went up in Gemini 8 and Apollo 9 before getting the call to command Apollo 15. The mission was the last trip to space for Scott and the only trips to space for Irwin and Worden for reasons we'll get to that don't involve death. After they blasted into space, and while Irwin and Scott drove around the surface of the moon on the rover, Worden orbited the rock, earning a Guinness World Record for the most isolated human being ever. On the dark side of the moon, Worden was 2,235 miles away from the closest human being. Meanwhile, on the surface of the moon, for like 18 hours, no joke. They spent a little over 3 days up there collecting samples and doing science experiments, returned to Earth amid controversy and rumor. First, the stamp incident. Without permission, the crew stashed 398 commemorative pre-stamped postcards somewhere in the module with the intention of selling these as space souvenirs upon their return. Though NASA turned a blind eye to this practice in previous missions, they decided to crack down on the crew of Apollo 15, and none of the astronauts ever flew to space again. There were also some U of M-related rumors about the flight. Is there a Block M flag on the moon? Probably not, though the crew did stash 20 miniature U of M flags in their gear with the intention of giving them out as gifts when they returned. There's also a rumor that while cruising the surface of the moon, Scott and Irwin dropped a document establishing a chapter of the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan on the surface. Scott stuck with NASA until 1977 and turned 85 in June of 2017. Irwin retired right after the mission, forever changed by his experience on the moon. "I felt the power of God as I'd never felt it before," Irwin said. He spent the next 20 years as an ambassador of peace for Jesus, launching several expeditions to Mount Ararat in Turkey, looking for Noah's Ark. Irwin's spirit was strong, but his heart not so much. He suffered three serious heart attacks from 1973 to 1991, the last one fatal. Jackson native Alfred Warden took some of the money from the sale of those space postcards and funded an unsuccessful bid for Congress in Florida. He too turned 85 in February 2017.
Number 1.
Edward H. White II. The first man to walk in space, part of the Nifty 9 NASA Group 2, 1959 UM graduate, almost Olympian, a man with the rightest of right stuff. Edward H. White II, born November 14, 1930 in San Antonio. After graduating from West Point in 1952, falling a tenth of a second shy of a spot on the U.S. Olympic team in the 400-meter hurdles, and flying NATO jets in Germany for 3 years, he came to Ann Arbor and picked up his master's in 1959. 3 years later, he was in NASA, and 3 years after that, he flew into space on Gemini 4 with fellow alum McDivitt. It was on that four-day mission that White popped the hatch on Gemini and floated in space for 20 minutes. McDivitt had to beg him to come back into the capsule. "It's the saddest moment of my life," White said upon returning to the craft. UM conferred an honorary doctorate on both astronauts upon their return to Earth, but White was the rising star, selected for the new Apollo program and chosen to be the senior pilot of Apollo 1 in a crew with experienced astronaut Gus Grissom and space newbie Roger Chaffee. The launch was scheduled for 1966, but pushed back to early 1967 as the astronauts trained. During a simulated launch countdown procedure a month before liftoff, a fire broke out in the oxygen-filled cabin, killing all three men. The flaws that caused the fatal fire were located and fixed, allowing the Apollo program to safely complete 16 missions to space. White was buried in West Point Cemetery and awarded the Congressional Space Medal of Honor. His additional achievements are too long to list, but to give you some sense of how amazing this man was, at least 9 elementary, middle, and high schools throughout the country are named for him, along with a bunch of parks, streets, a library, a West Point dorm, McDivitt White Plaza on the campus of the University of Michigan, and an honest-to-goodness hill on the surface of Mars. And you thought putting this guy's picture at number 7 was Looney Tunes. Ann Arbor Stories is presented by Rumble Pack Media in partnership with the Ann Arbor District Library. This episode was written and read by me, Rich Reddy, with sound and audio engineering by Brian Peters. Thanks again to the AADL and their archive staff, who do an amazing job digitizing old newspaper clippings and photos from Ann Arbor's past. You should visit oldnews.aadl.org and explore them someday. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Ann Arbor Stories, or email us your questions, comments, anything you'd like us to look into at annarborstories@gmail.com, and let us know how we're doing. Thanks for listening.